I'm Patty. I'm still an alcoholic. Did your sponsor share part of her fifth step with you? I didn't do my fifth step with my sponsor, so the answer is no. Do you with sponsees? Yes. I used to. A sponsor shared my fifth with another person, and I'm conflicted about whether to do that in the future. Oh, your sponsor shared your fifth step with them? I wouldn't share your fifth step with somebody else. I would share my fifth step with somebody. Or part. When somebody's doing a fifth step with me, they're sharing their alcoholism with me. I think it's really selfish if I only let you share your alcoholism with me. I think it's critical that I share my alcoholism with you. It's kind of like driving your car. When you fill up your gas tank and you're driving and you're just driving, your gas tank gets empty, 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 empty. Every once in a while, you got to pull over and you got to put some gas into your gas tank. So when somebody's sharing a fifth step and they're empty and empty and empty, and it's critical that every once in a while they get filled back up. So I share my alcoholism with them as they're sharing theirs with me. I think it's a really big part of doing a fifth step. The woman I did my fifth step with was not my sponsor. My program at this point was pathetic. Hers was worse than mine. The book says it doesn't matter who we share with, that God, you know, God put the person in front of me. So she did not share any of her story with me, but she did make what to me was a profound statement at the end of my fifth step that really altered my life. How does one turn one's life over to their higher power? P.S. Wonderful share. You touched me. Well, thank you, Mr. or Mrs. Happy Face. How you turn one's life over to your higher power will happen in the second half of this workshop. So stay tuned for the second half of the workshop. In the third step, we simply made a decision. It will happen through a series of taking some actions that we're just starting to take. What is unmanageability to you? I think unmanageability to me was my 12th drunk driving assault. I think unmanageability to me is when I drink alcohol and I can't predict my behavior, when I think this time it's going to be different, when I keep doing the same thing over and over. That's what unmanageability is to me. I have some ability to manage my life today. I can pretty much decide I'm going to walk from here to the back of the room and get it done. If I drink alcohol, I can't get that done, though. What do you see as being key to staying sober in the first three steps? Not taking a drink of alcohol. I think it's primary through the entire process of staying sober. Although a bit facetious, I think we don't hear it enough in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think we hear enough, don't drink. I think don't drink is key, and sometimes we miss it. Is this my proposal for marriage? Thank you. I won't read that one next. How do you deal with something like being dismissed from school for no good reason after working hard for 5 years to get there when you have many years of sobriety, prayer, therapy, more service? How do you deal with something? I resigned from a position that I've had for 22 years, and it wasn't by my choice. It was I was forced into a position where I had to, the right thing to do was to resign. I love my job. I love what I do. I love the people I do it with. For 22 years, I went to work, and every day that I went to work, it took my breath away because it was an incredible opportunity. And because of some circumstances that were out of my control, because of some people who thought they knew something better than I did, because I pissed somebody off, I was put in a position where the right thing to do was to resign from that job, and I had to resign. I have to believe that the things that I've been sharing for 37 years are true. I have to believe that every time I've thought my life was falling apart, it was really falling together. I have to believe that there's a God who has a plan for me bigger than anything I could ever imagine for myself. And that plan will, as I move down the road, if I don't drink and don't die, I'll be able to see how this is absolutely, perfectly, divinely inspired. It does not feel divinely inspired right now. I am very, very depressed. I'm very, very upset about it. I sometimes can tell the story and not cry. Most of the time I tell the story and cry. But I have to believe the things that I've been sharing in Alcoholics Anonymous for 37 years and that I have heard other people share with me. But please don't come up to me after the workshop and tell me God doesn't close one door without opening another. I may have to smack you. Being at this conference makes me want to drink. I've done 12 steps, sponsees, etc. Your thoughts. I think whenever I am around a lot of alcoholics, my alcoholism kicks up in any number of ways. When I'm around a lot of alcoholics, my alcoholism sometimes kicks up in that I think about drinking might be a good idea. Sometimes I listen to you share your stories, and your stories make it sound kind of romanticized, my alcoholism. My alcoholism is like a little tiger pup inside of me. You know how cute little tiger pups are? They're fuzzy and cuddly, and they're playful, and they're really kind of cute. Everybody kind of likes to have a little tiger pup. And that's what my alcoholism is. It's inside of me, this little tiger pup. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that little tiger pup fell asleep. And he's in there sleeping. But while he's sleeping, he's growing. And he's getting bigger, and he's getting bigger, and he's getting bigger. And now he's a full-grown tiger. And that full-grown tiger is not cuddly and fun and playful. That full-blown tiger is a killer. And sometimes that tiger can't hurt me because he's asleep. And sometimes, though, he'll roll over and kind of kick. And sometimes that kick makes me think, oh, alcohol, Jack Daniels, taboo, mouthwash. But if I don't take a drink, the tiger stays asleep. I might be uncomfortable for a while, and then he might roll over and kick me again. I might be uncomfortable for a while. I might be thinking alcohol. I might be thinking drink. I might be thinking. And the book says, you know, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. There's something about one-on-one, not a group, one-on-one. One-on-one, tell your story. One-on-one, tell your story and be reminded of that first step. And it puts that tiger right back to sleep. And that tiger can't hurt me, but I got it. It's still in here. It's alcoholism. Sometimes you make it. Sometimes I'm around you and it kicks. It's kind of like being around a pregnant woman. You know how you touch your little tummy, the pregnant woman's tummy, and all of a sudden the baby goes, whoa! And that's what happens. Sometimes that happens here. Not a bad thing, just because we're alcoholics. We're always going to be alcoholics. So if you're having difficulty, get yourself somebody, a newcomer, and tell them your story, whether they want to hear it or not. Just sit them down and tell them your story. So I got done from doing that fifth step, and I drove home, and the book says after we do our fifth step, it says that you know, we don't rest. It's not a resting point. Some people think it's a resting point, but it's not a resting point. The book says that we get the book, we take this book down from the shelf. Well, my book was on my coffee table, and so I panicked. So I put it on the shelf because I want to do it right. I've just exposed myself pretty much here. I don't want to mess it up now. So I put my book up on the shelf and sat down on my couch for a minute, and then I got up and I got the book down from the shelf. And I opened it up and I read where it talks about the sixth step, and it talks about looking at the first five proposals. And I was building an archway through which I was going to walk to freedom. It's kind of poetic. And I think Bill and Bob, I think those new guys, I think they had to make this kind of poetic for us. Because alcoholics, sometimes we kind of get to this point where now I've exposed myself. Now those feelings that I didn't want, that I drank because I don't want those feelings, now those feelings are like all kind of dancing around me. I don't know if I want to feel these. I don't know. I want to drink now. So I think they have to make it kind of like poetic. We're going to walk through the archway to freedom. Like, oh, okay, I can do that. And we think about the first five proposals. Have I done them thoroughly? I'm making a foundation here. Is the foundation strong? It's kind of like I built a brick wall at my house one time. I'm not a mason, but, I mean, it doesn't look that hard, really. You just dig a little trench, and then you get some mortar, and you mix it up. It's kind of a recipe, though. We've done too much water. I made a lot because I had to keep adding more to it. And then you just get these bricks, and you lay them out. Then you get the mortar, and you get it on that little thing. and you toss it up in the air, and then you catch it, and you slam it down on the bricks, and I'm kind of building this brick wall, and I'm kind of having fun and building my little brick wall, and I get it all built, and I look at it, and it's, well, it's kind of like crooked. It didn't go as straight as I thought it would be. And that's what I'm looking at here. Is that brick, is that straight? Have I laid the straight? Have I laid a straight? This is a foundation. My brick wall was going to hold up a hill. I mean, it's got to be done right. My sixth step is like going to hold me up and hold me in good stead. It's got to be right. If I've done it right, if I've done it thoroughly. Well, that brick wall, you know what you can do? You can put a lot of stucco on it. You just stucco a lot of stucco. You can straighten it right out with a lot of stucco. And we get an opportunity to stucco it a little bit. I mean, if I left something out, how many times of us have called or sponsored? How many women I've listened to their fifth step and on the way home they call me or the next day they call and say, you know what, I forgot, I didn't tell you something. Because living with that unresolved, it's like, oh, I didn't tell that. I was going to hold on to that. But it's my brick wall. It's kind of, I need some more stucco on there. I've got to straighten it out. So I got to call, I got to unload all of it. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it all. So we sit and we look at the first five proposals. Are they, is it strong? Is it set? Have I left anything out? Do I need to talk to somebody else? Do I need more? Do I need to disclose more? If not, and this is, it really just takes me right into the seventh step, which I think is the most powerful prayer we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think the seventh step prayer is the most powerful prayer we have here. Because it's like, this is what it says. It says, God, take all of me. Good and bad. How powerful is that for an alcoholic of my nature? Take it all, good and bad. I don't have to judge it anymore. Is it a good thing, a bad thing, a right thing, a wrong thing? My will or God's will? Who cares? Take it all. I don't have, how many times have we spent our lives trying to decide, is this what God wants me to do or is that what God wants me to do? Does God want me to have this job or that job? Does God want me to, well, I know He is God's will for me. I mean, how many times it would, does it take it all, good and bad? Leave me with this. Leave me with what I need to be of service to you and my fellows. How powerful is that? Selfish and self-centered, that's what walked through the door. I've done very little. I admitted I was alcoholic. I came to believe you were telling me the truth. I made a decision to do what you said you had done. I wrote about my favorite topic, me. I shared it with somebody else and bored her for a couple of hours. And as a result of those very simple things, I'm now in a position where all I care about is being of service to you and God. How powerful is that? And I think too many people miss it. I think too many people miss the simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous because they try to complicate. They complicate it too much. And we're not sponsoring people in a way that makes it simple for them. We're not sponsoring people in, and I worked in treatment, so I don't have a problem with treatment. But I think treatment is coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I think we're having people bring their treatment work to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're sponsoring people with their treatment work. I've had people, women that ask me to sponsor them and they want to know if I'm going to give them a packet. I say, a packet of what? Here's your packet. Pack this. Packets are treatment. Don't be looking for packets in Alcoholics Anonymous. Packets are treatment. In treatment, we have to give packets because we have to have clear objective. We have to be able to prove that we've done something. So in AA, we don't have to. We prove we've done something in AA because you're sober. Hey, you're sober. Look, we did something. So people can get it all mixed up with treatment. Leave treatment, please. Leave treatment out. Leave treatment in the treatment center. If you're sponsoring men or women, do not sponsor them the way that your counselor worked with you in treatment. Sponsor them the way the book Alcoholics Anonymous talks. Bring the steps alive in somebody's life in, through experience, strength, and hope. Okay, let me get off that. Oh, God. But it's simple. It's simple, and too many people miss it because it's simple. Steps 8 and 9 for me are conventional ways of getting rid of conventional guilt. I felt guilty because I was guilty. I did a lot of things to a lot of people for one more drink. If it came between you and a drink, I took a drink. A job and a drink, I took a drink. family and a drink, I took a drink. If it came between you and a drink, I took a drink. The only thing I wanted to do since I was in the fourth grade was be a writer. I had an opportunity to go into that profession. I gave it up for one more drink. Didn't matter. I think the biggest lie we tell in Alcoholics Anonymous is I'm only hurting myself. I'm only hurting myself. If they just leave me alone, if you just get off my back, my boss would just stop nagging me. My boyfriend would just treat me better. I wouldn't be like this. I think the biggest lie we tell is that I'm only hurting myself. My experience is if you have a mother, there's somebody whose heart you're breaking. I felt guilty because I was guilty. I did a lot of things for a lot of people for one more drink. And it wasn't just about saying sorry. I made my list of people that I had harmed, which it was a lot. I had a big list. I had chose alcohol above everybody. I owed a lot of money when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had disrupted a lot of businesses. I had disrupted a lot of institutions. I had a lot of sorries, and it wasn't just saying sorry. I said sorry all my life, sorry, sorry, sorry. Then I'd do it again and get caught. Sorry, 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 and then I'd do it again and get caught. It wasn't just saying sorry. It was about living my life differently, and I don't know how. This is the only way I know how to live. I don't know how to live any different than this, but you do. Mm-hmm. And so I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you share how to go to work and not take a drink. And you share how to be a daughter and not take a drink. And you share how to be a parent and not take a drink. And you share how to be a friend and not take a drink. And you share your experiences with me exactly the way Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us to share what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. And you talk about living your life and not taking a drink. And you allow me to take that experience out into the world and live it, and it becomes my experience. I'm the woman I am this afternoon because the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous have shared with me. I had, so I'll share with you a couple of my amends. I was not a good, I had a lot of resentments against my mother because my mother was never there for me. She didn't take care of me. She didn't, mostly didn't cheat us. She was not a good parent. She was not a role model. I had a lot of resentments against my mother. And I had not been a good daughter. I had never been a good daughter. I got out of that house the minute I could get out of it. I was not there for anybody in my family. I was not a good daughter. And I don't know how to be a good daughter. I don't know how to be a good daughter. How does a good daughter, how is that? What does that look like? I don't know how to be a good daughter. And there was a woman in one of my meetings that just drove me nuts. Because she always shared about going to her mother's. I'm like, you're a grown woman, for the love of God. She always talked in the meeting about going to her mother's and cleaning her mother's refrigerator and whatever she did. And was like, geez, talk about something else. I'm tired about your mother. Until it got to my amends. And then all the things that I'd heard her say in that meeting that I just thought were stupid, all of that stuff just came back to me when it came time to make amends to my mother. And I went and talked to my mother, and I told my mother I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother did not want me to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother didn't like alcoholics much, and she thought I just came to AA because of my work, and she didn't want me to be an alcoholic. And she didn't think I drank, because I'm a clever alcoholic. I would go to jail, and I would write my mother letters. If I was in San Diego, I'd write her letters, and I'd send the letter to my roommate, who'd open the envelope, and there'd be another envelope addressed to my mother, and she'd mail it from San Diego with me telling my mother how great school was and how wonderful I was doing. So my mother had no idea of my alcoholism, so I had to first tell her about my alcoholism, and I had to tell her the things that I had done that were not what good daughters do. And it was very difficult for my mother to listen to, but God bless her, she listened to it. And then I asked her what it was I could do to make it right. And she said to me, my mother lived in Escondido, I lived in Orange County. My mother said, I want you to come visit me every Sunday. Yeah, that's what I said. Well, that's a little over the top. I mean, how about I write you a note? How about, you know, I send you a card once a month? Every Sunday? I started going to my mother's house every Sunday. And I'm not a shopper. I mean, I do my Christmas shopping at 7-Eleven. I'm not a shopper. I don't like shopping. My mother is a shopper. My mother wanted me to take her to the mall every Sunday. Every Sunday we went to the mall. I wanted to slash my wrist. I'm reciting the fifth chapter five to the whole mall. My mother is buying me crap that I don't want. But my mother's trying to be a good mother. And she's buying me stuff. I mean, I would never wear any of it, but she's buying me stuff. And I'm going, and I'm trying to be a good daughter, and she's trying to be a good mother, I suppose. I went to my mother's house almost every Sunday for 15 years before I felt as though the amend was done. Not before my mother said, you don't have to come here anymore, but before I felt like the amend was done, amend was made. To my mother's for 15 years, and I felt as though I were a good daughter. My mother, I was my mother's favorite child. I felt as though I was a good daughter. 15 years doing what you shared you had done. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a loner by nature. I don't like people. Unfortunately, the world's full of them, but my preference is to be alone. I'm not big on people. I'm about 6-7 years sober, and I'm coming to a lot of meetings now. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I suddenly realized that people in AA are doing things other than coming to meetings. Now, let me remind you, I have a college degree. I'm not retarded, but 6 or 7 years before I realized this, the people are doing things other than coming to meetings. They're like going out to dinner after meetings. They're going to coffee. They're going to movies. They're going to conferences on weekends. They're like doing things together. And I'm thinking, well, I need to have some friends. So I don't know exactly how to do that. I mentioned it to my sponsor, who said, well, if you want to have friends, you have to be a friend. I said, well, I don't know how to do that. So here's what I do to be your friend. I sit next to Johnny for a meeting. And the next meeting, I sit next to Johnny again. And then the third meeting, I'm sitting next to Johnny. Now I think, oh, Johnny's my friend. I have a friend. I'm really pretty excited. Pretty excited that I've got a friend. Well, then I'm sitting next to Johnny, and he's chewing gum, and he cracks his gum. I hate gum cracking. I can't tolerate gum cracking. I'm thinking, I cannot believe I have picked a friend who's a gum cracker. Certainly, he can't be my friend anymore. So then I sit next to Mary. And then the next meeting, I sit next to Mary. And then the third meeting, I'm sitting next to Mary. And then now Mary's my friend, and I'm pretty excited. Now I've got a friend. But then Mary crosses her legs and kicks me. I'm thinking, no, I can't. I just picked a friend who's abusive. She just kicked me. She can't be my friend. And well, I can't even believe I picked her. So then I sit next to Lindy. And 2, 3, 4 meetings. Now I've got a friend, and this is exciting. Now, AA is huge. You can do this for a really long time. And I'm sitting, and Lindy goes to get a cup of coffee, and she comes back and sits down. I'm like, she didn't bring me a cup of coffee. She didn't even ask me if I wanted one. I'm kind of selfish and self-centered. She can't be my friend either. So I'm like, I'm going through AA, like, I'm doing a lot. And one day I'm chatting with my sponsor. And you know how sometimes when you talk to your sponsor, you kind of are like bringing them up to speed on your life? And I mentioned this thing about people in AA don't know how to be friends. And she said, well, wait, back up to that. What do you mean the people in AA don't know how to be friends? I'm going to tell her about Johnny cracking his gum and Mary kicking me and Lindy not bringing me coffee. And she said, Patty, remember when when you talked about your father and you told me you refused to make amends to your father? I said, yeah, I hate him. He's an abusive alcoholic. I don't want him in my life. I don't need him in my life. I don't want to go to the father-daughter banquet, but for sure. And no, I'm not making amends to him. She said, but Patty, hate doesn't know that it's directed at one person. Hate will spill into every relationship in your life. And you're not going to be able to have friends unless you make that amend. I became willing to make amends to my father, not because I wanted to go to the father-daughter banquet. I became willing to make amends to my father because I wanted to have relationships with you. It doesn't matter what your motive is. It doesn't matter what your intentions are. It doesn't matter what your desires are. What matters is what your actions are. I became willing to make amends to my father so I could have relationships with you. And I went to my father, who I hated, and I told him I was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which he knew. I had been trying to 12-step him. I would anonymously send him literature in the mail. I left a big book one time at the bar where he drank with his name on it. And I'd actually driven him a couple times to detox, and he would tell me AA didn't work, and I said, yeah, well, you got to stop drinking the vodka for it to work really well. But so he knew I was in AA, but I told him I was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to be a part of his life, and which was some of the hardest words for me to say. And I started sending my father a card once a week, and I started sending him birthday cards, and I started calling him up, and I didn't go visit him so much because he was a very, very, very violent alcoholic. But I mailed and I called and I did those kinds of things. And then his then wife called me one day, and he was in the hospital. He'd been very, very ill. And I went to visit him, and he was very, very ill. And I visited with him for a while, and I told him I'll come back Monday. I'm going away for the weekend. I'll come back Monday and see you. And I leaned over and I gave him a kiss and I told him I loved him. I didn't know I loved him. Absolutely did not know I loved him. But because I had taken a series of actions to be a good daughter, those words came out of my mouth and I knew I believed it. Still didn't want to go to the father-daughter banquet with him, but I knew that I believed those words. And I left. I went out of town for the weekend, and my brother called me, and we didn't have cell phones then, but my brother called me, and he said, I was in Kansas, and he said, Dad's really, really taking a turn for the worse. They don't expect him to live through the weekend. You need to come. I said, I can't come. I'm out of state. I told him I'd be there Monday. And he said, I don't think he'll live till Monday. And he's gone into a coma and blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, there's nothing I can do. So I flew back home. I got home on Sunday, and Monday, like I said I would, I went to the hospital to see him, and he was in a coma. And I leaned over and I whispered to him, Dad, you got to stop pinching the nurses on the ass because they're starting to complain about it. And he opened his eyes and he smiled. And that night he died. And I was able to share with my brothers and sisters my last moment with our father. Because their last moment with our father, he was unconscious. He was in my last moment with our dad was that he looked at me and he smiled. And I was in my 20s, and it was the first time he'd ever smiled at me. And he looked at me and he smiled, and that night he died. And because I'd gotten right with my father, I began to have friendships in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've had some amazing friendships here. My best friend, who the book talks about, we are people who normally would not mix. My best friend, I used to refer to her as the princess, because I thought self-supporting through your own contributions was work. She thought it was alimony. We used to go to conventions together, and I'd have a backpack over my arm. She'd have a footlocker because she'd have to make costume changes. And she used to refer to me as the medicine woman. And we were certainly people who normally would not mix. But the thing that we had in common was a passion for Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a tremendous compassion for Alcoholics Anonymous. They called us the nodding sisters because we'd be sitting in a meeting, we'd both be nodding at the same time. And Cindy Martindale was my best friend for 18 years. Because the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a friend. Because you shared with me that if I made amends to my father, I would be able to have relationships with you. And my friend Cindy had breast cancer, and a number of us walked through breast cancer with her, and she went into remission. And then about 8 years ago, her breast cancer came back in her liver. And she was going to, she still smoked cigarettes, too. And the doctor kept telling her, you need to quit smoking. And she said, well, I'll put that on my list. And they gave her 6 weeks to live. And we went every doctor's appointment. I was with her, and several other people were with her. And we'd be in the doctor's office, and the doctor would come in and be telling her all kinds of medical stuff. And Cindy would look at me, and she'd say, well, medicine woman, what do you think? And then I would give my input. And at the end of the 6 weeks, the last time we went to the doctor, she told the doctor, she said, we'd be glad to know I've quit smoking. And that Thursday, she went home, and she fell asleep, and she never did wake back up. And on Saturday, I was in her room with her, and we were playing music on the tape recorder, and we were talking, and I told her, I said, Cindy, you need to let go. You need to go. We're going to be okay here without you. Her fiancé had died a couple years before of acute alcoholism. I said, you need to go. Michael needs you. And we're going to be okay. And that night, with her mother and myself and her sponsor and another friend in her room, she took her last breath. And I fell to my knees and I thought, you know, I don't think I can live through this. I don't think I can live through this pain. This is the worst pain I've been in. I don't think I can move through it. I'm the kid who didn't want to be hurt anymore. And as a result of friendships in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm in the worst pain that I've ever been in. I don't think I can live through this pain. But my feet knew what to do. My feet had been trained. And my feet took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I shared in that meeting, and I shared in the next meeting, I shared in the next meeting. What I come to learn is this. People come into my life, and you touch my heart. And because brick at a time, that brick wall has been removed between me and you. God has allowed you to come into my life and touch my heart. And sometimes that's painful. An Al-Anon said to me, she said, if you could get rid of this pain right now, would you give up a single day that you've had in the last 18 years with your friend the princess? And I would not have given up a single day. I would not have given up a single day. The steps are powerful. They bring us to a place that we didn't even know we needed to come. They take us on a journey that we didn't even know we wanted to go on. They bring people into our lives that we didn't know. We are people who normally would not mix. Look at the person sitting next to you. Before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Really. I mean, really. I'm going to tell you a story about Lindy in a little while, and I'll tell you what, Lindy and I normally would not have mixed, but I made amends to the people in my life. I made amends to everybody. I got right with everybody in my life, and I paid back the money that I owed. I was, and 37 years ago, well, 31 years ago by the time I finally got around to working steps, but $32,000 was a lot of money. It's still a lot of money. I wish I had it right now, but I thought, I'll just save up the money, and when I have it all saved up, I'll just pay everybody what I owe them. And my sponsor, who was not an accountant, in fact, did not even have an elementary school education, said, oh, no, honey, that's not going to work. She said, I need you to contact all those people, and you need to make some kind of an arrangement. And I called up all those people. And nobody said to me, I hear this all the time in AA, and it pisses me off. I hear people say, and I called Macy's, and they said, well, we've closed our books for that year, and by golly, you don't owe us anything. Or, the only thing I want for you is to be happy. Just stay sober. Don't worry about the money. Nobody ever said that to me. Everybody wanted every penny. Some people, I thought I owed $1,200. They said, oh, no, it's $1,800. I'm like, fuck you. And I began every month to write those checks. I began every month to write checks for $20, $25. No grandiosity. Little bits of money. Little bits of money every month. And to write those checks. Every month to write those checks. And it took me almost 20 years to get that debt cleared. And I went from a place where they want my money to knowing that it was their money and that I had mistakenly had their money. And I got right with all those finance. I accrued other financial debt since then, but I got right with all of that financial debt. I got right with everybody in my life, and I got right financially. And I wish it could have just ended there, but it doesn't end there. The book Alcoholics Anonymous, the 10th step says, continued to take inventory, and when we were wrong, not if we're wrong, not if by on an outside chance we make an unhealthy choice, not in the small percentage of those of you in AA who are going to do something wrong as you trudge this road of happy destiny. It said when you are wrong. When you are wrong, which means we're going to make mistakes. How cool is that? How cool is that? That all I thought, I come here, I'm going to work these steps, I'm going to apply the principles in my life. I mean, if you're honest, open-minded, and willing, how can you go wrong? I'm going to apply these principles in my life. I'm going to skyrocket to something up here above human. Never going to have a feeling that I judge as negative. Never going to have an action that I think is bad. Nobody's ever going to treat me in a way that I think is wrong. I'm just going to be up here floating. That's not what happened. The steps brought me into my humanness. And as a human being, I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but I sometimes lie. I still take things that don't belong to me. If it's pretty, I might just... I haven't for a while, but I might sleep with your boyfriend. I've done everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done everything. I've slept with newcomers, if you can believe that. I'd do it again in a minute, too, if I was a little younger, but... I've done everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I charged one time for a 12-step call. My mother lived in Escondido, and I always went to a meeting when I visited my mother. After a day at the mall, you have to go to a meeting. So I'd go to a meeting in Escondido, and there was a woman down there, chronic in and out of alcohol, in and out, in and out, in and out. And I'll tell you what, a number of years ago, in and out was unusual. Today it's almost required, it seems, but it was unusual a number of years ago for people to go in and out, in and out, in and out. And there was a woman that had been in and out, in and out. Everybody in Escondido had 12-stepped her. And nobody wanted to go. She called for help, and nobody wanted to go. Sometimes we get afraid. It just scares us. And nobody wanted to go on that 12-step call. And the woman who got the call called my mother's house thinking I might be there, and I was. And she asked me if I would go, and I went. And if money could keep you sober, this woman would never have had a problem. This woman had to have more money than God. It was a quarter of a mile from the street up her driveway to get to her house. She had an oak door that was this thick. It was an incredible amount of money. And we walked in the house, and she came down a spiral staircase, looked like the old care unit, or Raleigh Hills commercial, where they're wearing a gown with puke and wine all over it. And she came sauntering down, and I sent the other woman into the kitchen, and I looked at this woman, and I said, look, I understand that you're having trouble staying sober, and I know it's not your fault. The reason you're having difficulty is the people in Escondido, they won't tell you the secret to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I live in Orange County, so I can't just give you the secret, but for $100, and I should have asked for more, because she pulled $100 out of her pocket that quick, and I put it in my pocket, and I looked at her, and I said, the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. And the other woman came out of the kitchen. I said, we don't have to be here anymore. We left. And when that woman took a cake for 1 year of sobriety, I gave her back her $100, but I gave her back $100. And never once in that year did she ever tell anybody I charged her for that 12-step call. And I talk to her periodically. She is 28 years sober, an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, charge for those calls. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I think the key is this. Recovery happens when one alcoholic shares with another. I think that's the key. Then we can't say anything wrong. If we share one alcoholic to another, you can't say anything wrong. But when you're wrong, promptly admit it. So the step is this. The 10th step is this. Keep writing about it. Mary and I were talking when we took a break. I write all the time. Sometimes I think I had a stellar day. Sometimes I think I had the best day. I had the most productive day. It was the most positive day. But I always write. And so I'm writing. And then I find this little, you know, you were self-centered here and you wanted this to happen and it didn't and you got mad at that person. Crap, I thought I had a good day. And look at right here. I write myself right into trouble. But keep writing about it. Keep writing about it. Talking about it. Called somebody and said, you know what, I thought I had a really good day today, but I didn't. I was selfish and self-centered. This is what I did. Quack, 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 quack. Make amends if necessary. Call the person up and said, you know what, Keith, I expected you to do this and you didn't, and I got mad at you, and not only did I get mad at you, I told Johnny what a prick you were. What can I do to make that right? Make amends if necessary, and then turn your attention to somebody you would help. That's the key. And that's the piece that we forget. I forget a lot of time. Turn your attention to somebody you can help. It's one thing to write about it, find out where I had made my mistake, call my sponsor and tell her, make amends to the person if necessary, but then we leave it there. The key of the 10th step is turn your attention to somebody you can help. What is it I can do for you? Get out of myself. Get out of that place where I'm feeling negative about myself because I've made this mistake. I've done this thing wrong. This hasn't happened right for me. Turn your attention to somebody you can help. I will tell you this. The women I sponsor, they are so annoyed with me when I have a bad day because I don't write until about 11 o'clock at night. All of a sudden at 11:30, I'm calling them. Hey, how are you doing today? I didn't hear from you today. What's going on? How are you? Is there anything I can do for you? Let's meet and have coffee. Turn your attention to somebody you can help. It's really important to sponsor people. You got a whole bevy of people that you can just annoy the hell out of when it's time. When you have to help somebody, they're right there. They're accessible to you. The other good thing about sponsoring people, I like to sponsor a lot of women because I tell them what to do, and then they do it, and then I watch them, and if it works for them, then I try it. So. Turn your attention to somebody you can help. The key of the steps, the magic in the steps, always and forever is, what can I do for you? How can I be of service? Turn your attention to somebody you can help. The 11th step for me, I said my prayers this morning. My prayer this morning was the same as it's been for a number of years. My prayer every morning, I wake up, I do what the book says to do. On awakening, I think of the 24 hours ahead. I cannot get up and go to the bathroom and have a cup of coffee before I think of it, because by then, 10 or 15 minutes are gone by, I don't care about the 24 hours ahead anymore. I'm now focused on me. I need to focus on the 24 hours ahead on awakening. When I wake up, I ask God to divorce my thinking of selfish and self-centeredness. My prayer is very simply, thy will be done. I'm so naive, I truly believe the rest of the day is God's business. I read some spiritual stuff. I read the 24-hour-a-day book. I like to do that because I think I have ADD. They didn't diagnose it when I was a kid. But I'll tell you what, a shiny thing goes by, and I'm like off on it. I can get off on a tangent in a minute. So I read a spiritual reading in the morning so that I have something to focus myself back on. When I go off on one of my little tangents, I can focus myself back onto the reading for this morning. So I read something from one of those books every day. But my prayer, the prayer that I say is, thy will be done. I'm so naive, I believe the rest of the day was God's business. I have absolutely no doubt that I'm supposed to be here this afternoon with you. Because if I wasn't, I would be somewhere else. I have absolutely no doubt that when Lindy asked me to do this and didn't tell me it was in Fresno, that I said yes because I was supposed to be here, regardless of where it was. I have no doubt that that God's will for me is to be right where I am right now. Good luck, Keith. I hope you saved their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Look at him. He's an old-timer. Look at him. He got sober when he was 4. Bye. My prayer at night is a little scarier. I offer it to anybody who'd like to use it. I guarantee you, if you use this prayer for 90 days, it will change your life. My prayer at night is, dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. And when I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight, it will hold me in good stead. I didn't flip a single person off on the freeway on the way up here, and I wanted to. Didn't flip anybody off on the freeway. I was polite when the lady made me wait to buy my Nutter Butters, and there was absolutely no reason why I was having to wait for her. I was still polite. I don't live my life so much out of virtue as I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight. Dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. And I had somebody ask me once, they said, that's like, God, please have me treat people the way I wanted to be treated. That's the same as that. But for me, it isn't. Because I have alcoholism, rationalization, justification, and denial. If I were to say this morning, God, please have me treat people the way I want to be treated, here's what would happen. I'd be driving down the street, and I'd see this guy pull in front of me or whatever, and I'd think, you idiot. And I'd go around him, and I'd think, you know what? I don't care if somebody flips me off. And I'd because I can justify it. I can pretend like I don't care if they do that to me. I can make it okay. I'm going to tell Johnny that I'm going to take his wallet and then say, you know what? I think that kid over there took your wallet. I can justify that. I said, well, you know what, he doesn't really need that wallet, and that kid's big enough, he can protect himself if Johnny goes after him. I can justify, rationalize, and deny anything I want to do. So I don't say it in the morning, but if I say it at night, for me, it's got so much more power. Because I'm cruising through the day knowing I'm going to say that prayer tonight. I challenge you to use it. I guarantee if you do for 90 days, it'll change your life. And step 12 is the greatest gift I've ever been given. The opportunity to take a little of my past and give it to another alcoholic and look into the eyes of another alcoholic and say, honey, you don't have to live that way anymore. Take my hand, come with me, sit in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't have to live that way anymore. I have a life today beyond my wildest imagination, and I do have a wild imagination. Beyond my wildest imagination, I have a life today. I think the reason that we do all of this stuff, I love this. I usually read this at the beginning, and I forgot. Because I promised I wasn't going to read from the book, and I lied. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean a loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasure, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. Sign me up. This is why I'm doing the work. This is why I've taken these steps out of the book and put them into my life. This is what I want. This is who I want to be. I want to be the person who I can say for beyond a shadow of a doubt, I have done every one of those things. I have done every one of those things. I have had women sleep on my couch. One, I had a woman staying with me. We don't do it so much anymore. I don't know. I'm not sure why, but I had a woman staying on my couch one time, and I told her, I have to go to work. My son goes to school. You need to go get a job. So every day we'd leave. I'd go to work. Pat would go to school. She'd go off to find a job. One day I was halfway to work, and I thought, I forgot something. I turned around to go back home. She was sitting at my house in my bathrobe on my couch watching television. And she would go and then make a little turn at the corner and come back to the house. And I said, oh, no, this isn't going to work. You can't stay here, because we don't enable drunks. I mean, we help them, but we don't enable them. This looks like enabling. You're wearing my robe. This looks like could have probably dealt with just a home watching TV, but now I'm enabling you. If I let you stay here, you got to go. And I said, you got to be out by 5 o'clock. You got to go. I mean, she came with a shopping bag. It can't take her too long to get out. So I'm not heartless. I gave her till 5. So I'm at work, and I get a phone call from a woman, and she said, Diana asked me to come give her a ride. She said, you threw her out. She asked me to give her a ride. I just need to know, is the television really hers? And she said, just moving my shit out, just taking everything. You know, you came with a paper bag. Do not leave with the television. Those are the kinds of things that we do. I mean, those are the kinds of things I have to be willing to do. If my TV had been gone, my TV would have been gone. Those are the things that we have to be willing to do. I've never had to administer a sedative, but I have fed somebody beer to get them through the night. Alcohol withdrawals are hideous. People die in alcohol withdrawals. They don't die much in any other withdrawal, but they die in alcohol withdrawals. I've had to give women beer to get them through the first night of, I guess it's not really sobriety if you're giving them beer, but I've given, and I don't do it alone. One of the things that I learned from doing the work is that I can't do it by myself anymore. I have to ask for help. I cannot do it alone. I used to think I could do it alone. I cannot do it alone. I have to ask for help. I'm not going to administer at 37 years sober. I'm not going to be giving somebody else beer without having somebody else there with me. Don't do it alone. Don't go on a 12-step call by yourself. I have a life today as a result of the work beyond my wildest imagination. I want to tell you a story about Lindy. I've known Lindy for a long time. My son started dating her, which made me really nervous. Yikes, you're dating Lindy Pierce? Whoa. And I thought they were great together. They apparently didn't think they were so hot, but I thought they were great together. And Lindy got pregnant. I'm not sure how that happened, but one certainly doesn't want to think that their child would have sex any more than you want to think that your parent would have sex. So somehow Lindy got pregnant, and my grandson was born. I was in the hospital when my grandson was born, and I was taking pictures because he taught me here to have a job. In Alcoholics Anonymous, he taught me to have a job. If I want this to be mine, I have a job. If you want this conference to be yours, get on the committee. Don't just come and show up. Get on the committee. Be a part of it. If you want your home group to be yours, have a job. And I've always had jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous. So that day that my grandson was born, I was taking pictures, I was taking pictures. At one point, the doctor said to me, he said, "This is a good shot." And I'm looking, thinking, no, I know a little about the female anatomy, and this is not a good shot at all. And just about then, my grandson's head was born. And the doctor turned the head, and I looked into the eyes of God. And I looked behind him at Lindy, and I looked into the eyes of God. And I looked behind her at my son, and I looked into the eyes of God. And my grandson was born, he walked into my heart, and he changed my life. I have learned to love in Alcoholics Anonymous through a series of 12 steps that make absolutely no sense to me. When I came to you and all I heard was wah, 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 those steps make absolutely no sense. I have fought, I have kicked, I have yabutted every one of them. Every time I came to a step, I thought of everything else I could do. I tried everything else to do before I surrendered and did the step. I have fought, I have resisted, I have kicked, and I have screamed. And then I have taken the next one of the 12 steps in order, the way they're written, the way that you shared with me you had taken them. And through that series of seemingly ridiculous actions that had nothing to do with anything in my life, my grandson was born, he walked into my heart, and he changed my life. You taught me how to love here. You've let me love you. A brick at a time, you've taken down that brick wall that I built between me and you. I have fear. We all have fear as part of being human. Sometimes I get afraid. And when I get afraid, I throw a little styrofoam wall up. And then one of you comes and blows it, knocks it down, and you take my hand, and you walk me through whatever my fear was. But you've taken down that brick wall. 7132. Oh, I thought you wanted my password. And you have allowed me to stand here and look into the eyes of God. But that day in that hospital room, when I looked at Lindy Pierce and I looked into the eyes of God, I thought, how does that happen? I've known Lindy for a long time up to that point. I've known her at her worst, and I've seen her at her best. And that day I looked into the eyes of God. I thought, how does that happen? And my son, who drove me to distraction, who I was in the ring with his disease, he grew up here with you. You taught him to love and be kind. You taught him how to nurture. You also taught him how to con and manipulate, and I've never been thrilled with that. But, and he had a path that he had to go on that alcoholic men go on. He did things that no human being should do. And I was in the ring with his disease, and I was getting beat up bad. And I was tortured by his disease. And there was no God in that picture. And that day I looked into the eyes of God when I looked at my son. I thought, how does that happen? How does that happen except for this fact that you have allowed me a day at a time to stand here? You have continued to share your alcoholism with me. And you've continued by sharing your alcoholism, you've kept mine alive. And in keeping my alcoholism alive, you have given me a set of spiritual tools, and you've showed me how to use them, and you've allowed me to stand here and look into the eyes of God. My grandson is 6 years old. He's never done a single thing wrong. However, I will say he's getting close. He said to me the other day, he said, Grandma, do you believe in the tooth fairy? So I'm wondering how many teeth are loose, actually. But he said, Grandma, do you believe in the tooth fairy? I said, yes, yes, I do. He said, do you believe in leprechauns? I said, absolutely. He said, Grandma, he said, you know, there's some people, they don't believe in the tooth fairy, leprechauns, or Santa Claus. He said, I don't think they have very much fun. Alcoholics Anonymous is a place where we come and we believe in the tooth fairy. We believe in leprechauns. We believe in Santa Claus. And we believe in the tooth fairy, we believe in leprechauns, we believe in Santa Claus. Because we came from a place of incomprehensible demoralization. We came from a place of despair. We came from a place where we sat on bar stools and we dreamed dreams and we planned plans and we couldn't get off the bar stool and get it done. We came from a place where we were given a choice to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live by spiritual basis. We were given that choice, and it wasn't an easy choice for any of us. None of us made that choice easily. I believe we all came here and heard wah, 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 wah. Nobody came. Nobody woke up in the morning, clicked their heels, and said, God, I got to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to get there and change. I got to quit drinking. I got to change. But I don't think anybody came here that way. We all heard wah, 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 wah. But we came here, and because Johnny took a 30-day chip, because Ryan took a 6-month chip, because Sally took a 1-year cake, I saw that it worked. And I came to believe you were telling me the truth. And I came to believe in two fairies, leprechauns, and Santa Claus. Lindy had a birthday party for Eden when he was 5 years old. And she had a bounce house for him, and he wanted me to come in the bounce house. I'm not a bounce house kind of girl. I'm just not. I have COPD. I can barely breathe, you know, on a good standing, but he wanted me in the bounce house. I'll do anything for this boy. So I got in the bounce house. And he wanted to teach me how to do a bounce house somersault. Yes, right. Oh, no, it's right. I'm not limber at all. And he was very patient with me. He was jumping and somersaulting and jumping and somersaulting and telling me how easy it was and jumping and somersaulting. And then he was even trying to help my legs get over. And he didn't get mad at me. He didn't say, you're a lousy bounce house girl. He just kept very patiently, kept showing me how to do it, trying to help me get my legs over. And I finally did it. And he squealed. He was so happy that I had done a bounce house somersault. I was just happy to get out of the bounce house. So happy that I had done a bounce house somersault. And some people came to the party and wanted me back in the bounce house. And he wanted me to show them that I could do a bounce house somersault. I'm not sure I remember how to do it. I think it was a fluke, but. So I did it again, and I got out of the bounce house, and some more people came, and he wanted me back in. I'm like, I showed them that I could do it, and he's just thrilled. He's so thrilled that I can do it. And then some people came, and I know the drill. I just start getting in the bounce house. And I think, I got to show off again. And he said, no, Grandma, I don't want you to show them. I want you to teach them how to do a bounce house somersault. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's like a big bounce house. It's a giant bounce house. And with your new, we just want you to come in because we want to teach you how to do a bounce house somersault. We're not going to lose our patience. We're going to be very patient with you. We're going to be very tolerant. We're even going to try and help you get your legs over. We're going to help you do it. And we're going to, when you finally do it, we're going to squeal. We're going to be so happy that you can do it. And then some people are going to come. We're going to ask you to come in and show off again because we're just kind of like thrilled that we taught you how to do it. Look at what I did. I taught him how to do it. And we do that with our sponsees. Look what I did. I got her. And they do something good. Like, hey, I got her. But then somebody's going to come in and we're not going to want you to show them that you can do it. We're going to ask you to teach them how to do it. I hear people in AA all the time say, let us love you until you can love yourself. You know what? I love myself way too much. My message is this. Let us love you until you can love somebody else. Let us love you until you can find somebody who comes in that you're going to teach them how to do a bounce house somersault. A huge bounce house here. Come in and do a bounce house somersault with us. My grandson, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't give him up. I love him so much. If you said, I'll give you a shot at Jack Daniels if you give us Eden, ain't no way I'm giving you Eden. I love him too much. Give you a bottle of Jack Daniels. Just give us Eden. I'm not giving him up. Tiger rolls over and kicks me, saying, you know what, I'll give you a truckload of Jack Daniels. Just give us Eden. I'm not giving him up. Tiger can roll over and kick me. I love him too much. We'll give you the whole Jack Daniels plant. Just give us Eden. I'm not giving to you. But I'll tell you this. If I take one drink, I'm going to give him up for the second drink that quick. That's how quick I'm giving him up for the second drink. And I don't want to give him up. So I come here, and I stay in the middle of you. And I share my alcoholism with you so that it can touch yours. Not out of virtue so much as I want you to share yours with me so that it can touch mine. Because I need you to continue to share your alcoholism with me so that these steps that I have taken that have come alive, that are out of that book, that are in my soul, that are a fiber of my being, that I can continue to take those silly actions that allow me to stay here with you. When I was 4 days sober, an old man told me if I didn't drink, I wouldn't get drunk. If I didn't get drunk, my life would get different, and he didn't lie to me. I have never had it so good. I am so grateful that I had an opportunity to share with you today. I'm going to stop now, and I'm going to open it up. If anybody has any questions they want to ask, please feel free to do that. And thank you for letting me participate.